Well, who gonna hire a 65-year-old man?
Oh, excuse me.
You gonna sit behind the desk?
No, I'm 70 years old.
You're 70 years old.
I can sit behind the desk. And I'm telling you something. Matter of fact, if I run up on you, I might just knock you for your old lady. And they ain't have no problem. Because I'm gonna get in your pocket.
You are now tuned in to San Quentin's Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
The following podcast contains language and content that may not be appropriate for all listeners.
I'm Earlonne Woods, a prisoner at San Quentin State Prison in California.
I'm Nigel Poor, a visual artist, and I volunteer at San Quentin.
And together, we're going to take you inside.
I can't do this. I can't take care of you, man. You got to go. You got to go to the hospital, man.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
I came to prison in 1978. And when I saw old dudes in prison, I was like, man, how in the hell are you in prison at 60 years old? You tripping. What you do to be in prison at 60 years old?
Lonnie Morris is 66 years old. In 1977, he shot and killed a police officer during a jewelry store robbery. His sentence was 7 years to life.
I didn't think I was going to serve 7 years, but I sure didn't think I was going to serve 40. Because of the nature of my crime, I thought maybe I'd get out in 15, 20 years, something like that.
Lonnie's been in prison for 40 years, and 35 of those years have been right here in San Quentin. And E, it's pretty unusual for a guy to be here for so long.
Very unusual. I mean, most guys have spent a lot of time in other prisons before they get to San Quentin. Usually they come here from a higher security prison. Guys spend years trying to get to San Quentin because of the program.
And by programming, we mean educational opportunities and all the groups that are here.
Yeah, they have a lot of self-help groups.
And like Shakespeare.
Right, you have No More Tears, which is a violence prevention group. Criminal Gangs Anonymous, which help criminals and gang members.
Yoga.
You do have yoga, and I do have to get into yoga.
And there's also, there's like gardening here. Oh, there's that new cooking class.
They have, Quentin Cooks. They have, what is the one, coding?
Yeah, they're actually learning how to code. It's amazing. So there are so many opportunities here, and it makes sense that guys want to be here.
Yeah, because I wanted to transfer to San Quentin because of the film program that they had back in the day. And I did that. I got here, and now I'm into podcasting with you.
I am so glad you made it here.
Who are you telling?
How long did it actually take you to get here?
It took me roughly about 6 years to get to San Quentin.
Man, you were tenacious.
I would tell you how I got here, but I'm going to let that go.
Okay, so all we have to say is thank God you got here.
I got here.
So when the guys get here, they tend to be on the mature side?
What that mean, like ripe?
Well, it actually means to me that the population at San Quentin is getting towards middle age and up. I mean, you guys aren't young.
I mean, what you mean not young? Look, they have 18-year-olds here. You know, it's a small segment of the population, should I say. But most of the guys are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And the old guys here face the same health problem that older people face everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, the body doesn't respond as well as it used to respond. I used to run up the steps now. I walk up and I'm breathing a little harder. So all that stuff, comes to the fore, but I try to take care of myself.
Same as on the outside. Guys here try to take care of themselves, to put off the inevitable for as long as possible.
The inevitable?
The thing no one wants to talk about.
Okay, okay, I got you.
Dying.
I got you.
But here's what's different about aging in prison. For Lonnie and a lot of other guys, it's not just sickness and death that they're afraid of.
So for me, my big thought process is that I'm not dying in prison. So I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to entertain the thought of dying in prison. They put me outside the gate on the sidewalk, and I kill over dead. I'd rather that happen than for me to die in prison. That's one of the things that myself and a lot of guys dread, the possibility of that.
The truth is, with an aging population, guys do get sick and they do die in prison. And that's what we're talking about in this episode. How does San Quentin, a community of prisoners, staff, and volunteers, deal with getting old and all that comes with it?
Hey, Erlon, your sentence is 31 years to life. And do you ever think about getting old and maybe even dying in prison?
I never really think about that. Like, when you know, when you look in the mirror and you see those extra gray hairs popping up.
Yeah, I've seen more of those lately on you.
Yeah, you realize, damn, it's happening. It's happening right in front of me. But I still got a full head of hair, so I'm good with that.
And you do have that, the Erlon
my brother,
beard.
My brother don't have that.
I know, he always wears a hat, too.
I do have that. But the one thing I don't worry about is getting killed in San Quentin. That wasn't always the case here. Death in San Quentin was not always a natural occurrence.
So in your 40 years, how many people do you think you've witnessed die in prison?
Hundreds that I knew. And so it's been a lot of people. Gunshots, strokes, heart attacks. Multiple people dying from stabbings, pneumonia, belly fever, HIV, hepatitis C, suicides, gang of suicides. Other guys been thrown off tiers. Other guys have jumped off tiers to their death, escaping being stabbed. No people been strangled to death. People burnt up in their cells. Some purposely set on fire. Others that their cell caught on fire, and they were burned to death by that. And one of my friends, I literally heard him being stabbed to death. And he was screaming, and we were all locked in our cell. The guy that killed him locked up in the cell with him at count time and stabbed him 37 times. And you could hear him screaming. That was really horrible.
E, when was the last time somebody was killed at San Quentin? I can't even remember if there's been a murder since 2011 when I started volunteering here.
I think the last murder here probably was in the reception area.
Recently?
I don't know.
I mean, the point is it's not that common, right?
It's not that common here, but there's nothing like the level of violence that Lonnie experienced a few decades ago. Back then, getting old in prison meant you had survived.
When I first came to prison, respect was everything. You didn't disrespect people because back then you could lose your life. Prison was a very serious place, very dangerous place. And stabbings were regular. They were normal procedures. So it wasn't no, oh, let's fist fight, oh, let's talk about it. You was going to get stabbed. And good possibility you was going to die because people were stabbing you to kill you. So most of the older guys that were in prison that had survived and was still, quote unquote, walking the main line or what we call OGs were pretty serious guys.
I used to think OGs meant old guys.
Original gangsters. You better not call them old guys, Nigel.
The OG in the building. Yeah, talk all shit. They know who I am. The one don't like all the loud music and all that loud romping and all that stuff they doing. You know what I'm saying? They're in your mind.
Andre Eric Watson has been in prison for 20 years, and he's serving a 65-year-to-life sentence for second-degree murder.
First of all, I wanted to be known. I refuse to die in prison. I don't care how old I get. I'm going to make it to the streets. But at the time,
Andre is 72 years old. He was recently diagnosed with stage 3 throat cancer.
We thought you was going to die, OG. You're losing all that weight. And when we got said, no, I ain't going nowhere because I refuse to die in prison. Make a long story short, I went through the treatment and I survived it.
He survived. And there are two things that keeps him going in his old age. He loves to talk shit.
It's not that I'm downgrading them all the time, but if they open the door, I'm going to step in and talk some shit. Simple as that.
And there's another thing that keeps him going. The idea of getting out before he dies and finding him a female.
Give me a personal ad now. If you were going to make a personal ad, what would it say?
What would it say? It would say that, listen, I'm a really great guy. I'm elderly, really great, and in good shape. You know what I'm saying? Looking for middle age, yeah, good shape.
So, in other words, you want to go to the boom boom room?
Soon as possible. Soon as possible. Come on, man, 20 years? I mean, it's just like riding a bicycle. I haven't had a bicycle in a long time, but I sure know how to get on a ride again. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to fall off. I mean, that's one thing to keep guys like us living, to live through this, is we're looking to get out there to get in the saddle one more time. Simple as that.
Well, I have to say, I really hope that he gets back in that saddle before he's too old.
Me too, and me too.
Simple as that?
Simple as that. I'm with him on that. But you know, Andre is lucky to have survived throat cancer, and he's lucky he didn't grow old in here in the 1980s when this was a very different institution.
So you didn't see older guys as being frail or not being able to take care of themselves because they weren't as physically strong as the younger guys?
Well, you know, it's interesting because back then it wasn't like that. You couldn't afford to be frail and weak and fragile and vulnerable. Old cats was out there lifting, you know, 5 and 6 quarters. They 60 years old and they pumping iron and got 18-inch arms and 19-inch arms. So everybody had to stay fit. That was part of the regimen.
They don't have weights at San Quentin anymore.
No, they don't have them nowhere in the Department of Corrections, not unless you're like in fire camp or something. But, you know, we all surmise that California took them out of the prisons because the correctional officers couldn't control dudes.
What, because they were getting so big?
They were huge, like dudes walking around with 25-inch arms. Like, just like, and you like, hey, get against the wall. You're like, what?
Intimidating. Intimidating. But, hey, I have to say, I see some correctional officers with some pretty big arms on them.
But nowadays, you don't need 18s on the hang anymore. Things are a lot safer on level twos.
That's a good distinction. We were talking about level two prison.
Might be different on level four.
Okay, let's get back to that idea of aging in prison. And I want to bring in somebody who makes the process a lot easier.
My name is Richard Lathan.
Richard Lathan's a former gang member who's serving a 15-year-to-life sentence for murder.
And the job I do is taking care of people.
Richard is called a gold coat, which is guys that are employed by custody to assist the medical department. They go get guys who are, I don't want to say incapacitated, I just want to say they have some type of disability. Inmate Disability Assistance Program.
Yeah, that's right.
It's IDAP worker, that's what we call them. We call them gold coats because the shirts, we wear blue shirts, they wear gold shirts, which identify them as someone different than us.
Right, and they can go to different parts of the prison that we can't go to.
Right.
My position is that I do everything that an inmate need assistance on. Going to get his food, cleaning up scabies, cleaning up feces, basically. Assisting an inmate and when he used the bathroom on himself, making sure they get to their appointments, assisting them if they can't read or write. I basically just sit and wait to be needed, per se.
So when you say people that need help, you mean like elderly?
It could be elderly. It can be people that had operations, guys who have dementia, maybe, or guys who have colostomy bags. It could be guys mobility impaired or hearing impaired. It could be cancer patients bleeding. Then I have to take them to the hospital, come back, clean the blood up, make sure they cell is clean.
Richard's kind of an assistant, I would say, in the infirmary.
Right.
But we should make it clear that they're doctors, nurses, and other professional medical staff that work at San Quentin. And guys call it a hospital, but technically, it's an infirmary.
Yeah, it's a newer infirmary. It's actually called a correctional treatment center, and it was built in 2009.
Right. It's actually the first building you see when you walk in through the gate.
Right. And it's a new modern. It has like 5 floors. It's pretty fly. For a prison, an old prison. Yeah.
Have you been there?
I've been in there, yes.
For what?
You have to go there for dental. You have to go there for mental health. You have to go there for doctor appointments. I've only been on the 4th floor for filming purposes.
Yeah, the dreaded 4th floor. Yeah,
the 4th floor, that's where the guys are really sick. That's where they go. It's the place where a lot of guys don't want to end up.
Was it depressing when you went up there?
Well, I mean, I was just looking at it from the point of view where you just stuck in a cell.
Oh, man. I just imagine it was like a room at a hospital.
Are you thinking of like some military hospital?
Exactly.
Everybody
what I
just
was
laid
thinking.
Up yes. next to each other. They can like look over like, hey, what's up, Frank?
No, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Nah, you're in a cell. So have you ever noticed guys that didn't want to go like to the fourth floor when they're sick because they don't want to be alone or something like that?
Yeah, it's been quite a few guys. It's been quite a few guys didn't want to go to the fourth floor because they figured all they going to give them is pills. I said, man, what you going to do, sit here and die?
I think most people are scared of being alone. They know once they get up there, there's no more coming down to the yard. There's no more general population. So they're basically isolating themselves. And I think that's what happens.
That's exactly right. That's what they're scared of. There's no more affection, no more individuals looking out for them.
About 5 or 6 years ago, they put a guy in my cell named T. That was what we called him. But I knew him around the prison before he became my cellie. He was a very healthy guy, worked out every day. Before they took the weights, he'd lift weights. After they took the weights, he'd do pull-ups and push-ups and run the track. And so he was kind of like a health nut in terms of working out. Over like a six-month period of time, I watched him deteriorate from this virile man into this person that could not get out of bed on his own accord. And I had to help him get out of bed. I had to bring his food to him sometime. They wanted to put him in the hospital, and he refused to go. And so myself and a group of guys that were his friends, we elected to try to take care of him as best we could. And he didn't initially tell me that he had cancer. He was like, oh, man, I got something going on. And then, you know, after some time talking about it, and I guess he felt comfortable. He said, man, you know, I got this cancer. He started sleeping a lot, and I think that had to do something with the chemo. No appetite, you know, that kind of stuff there. And so I would fix him food. You know, I'd fix little spreads in the cell so he could eat. He didn't have to go worry about going to chow. And, you know, I'd share my packages with him. Some days he could walk, some days he couldn't walk, to then becoming wheelchair bound. And his thing was, oh, man, I don't care what them doctors saying. I ain't going over there. You know, everybody go up in the hospital, die. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going out like that. And, you know, I'm cool, and I'll be all right. And I remember waking up one morning, and I was on the top bunk, and I got ready to get out of bed, and he was laying on the floor. And I was like, T. And he was like, I'm all right. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I don't know if I can finish this. I didn't think this was going. I wasn't planning on this. Oh, damn, man. He was laying there, man. And I was like, you all right, man? And he was like, I'm all right. And I got down off the bed, and I went to pick him up, and he had just defecated on the floor on himself. And so I had to pick him up out of the defecation and get him in the wheelchair and again get him outside the cell. And he kept saying, I'm all right. And I was like, bruh, you're not all right, man. You're not. I can't do this no more. You got to go to the hospital, man. And he was like, man, I'm all right. I ain't going to the hospital. I'm going to be okay. I can do it. I said, T, you cannot, bruh. Look at the cell. You done defecated all over the floor and in his bed. I looked in his bed and it was full of defecation. And I was like, bruh, I can't do this. I can't take care of you, man. Look at this, man. I don't know what to tell you, but you got to go. You got to go to the hospital, man.
This took place about 6 years ago, before San Quentin had gold coats like Richard, who could have helped with this situation.
So if you get guys that are stubborn or just tired, don't want to come out their cell, what's your position?
Well, if you tell me you sick, you coming out of there. I'm not going to let you sit in there. I'm going to make sense of it. I say, look, when you come in here and you dealing with me, you can't just sit in the cell and die. You're not going to do that. Because I'm going to let them know. I said, you can fight me all you want, but you're going to the hospital. You know, and they understand.
You know, Nigel, I asked Richard why he spends his time taking care of the sick and the elderly, because it can't be an easy job.
Oh, man, no.
Why do you take that stance?
Because I was a gang member. So now this is my chance to give him back. So this is how I do it. I figure if I give back to life, then my life would be given back to me. 26 years ago, I did take someone's life. And I'm with two attempted murders in the process. I was young then, 21 years old then. You know, I'm turning 49 in January. I don't have the same outlook no more. I don't have the same ideologies. I don't have the same values, instilled street values. No, don't abide by that. You know what I'm saying?
Richard's not getting any younger himself, and he's had his own health problems.
I done had a seizure a couple weeks ago, and the only thing I can think about is taking care of the fellas. It's the only thing I can think about.
Like we said, the Gold Coats weren't around when T was dying. When we come back from the break, we'll hear what Lonnie did.
So T is dying in his cell, but he refuses to go to the hospital. And Lonnie, his cellie, is having a really hard time with it.
I can't do it. He has to go. And I told him that. And they came and got him. And they took him to the hospital. And when he got up to the hospital, he told dudes, ah, man, Lonnie sold me out, called the medical people on me, and had me sent over here to the hospital. I don't need to be over here. And he was complaining. And I was very, very, very angry. I was incensed. I was like, I'll be damned. I done took care of this dude all this damn time, did all this stuff for him, and he gonna say now that I crossed him into the hospital? What the hell am I supposed to do? So I was just really angry about that. And I remember sending word up there, and I felt bad after I did, because this man is dying. You know, but my anger got the best of me. I said, well, man, you tell T to go to hell, bro. You know, he's a damn unappreciated dude that after all I done, he gonna send word out here that I sold him out. I said, that's BS, you know. And I was cussing then. I'm not trying not to cuss right now. But anyway, that was the really difficult part, was that this is the way the relationship, you know, kind of ended. He stayed up in the hospital a month or two, and then he died. So they, you know, obviously they came and told me he had died and all that. And then we had a memorial service for him, you know, went to that, and, you know, yeah.
Thanks to Lonnie Morris for sharing his story.
Yeah, that was a hard one. Thanks also to Richard for coming onto the podcast and explaining what a gold coat does. Keep up the good work, Richard, but also take care of yourself. Our sound designer is Antoine Williams. Pat Macedi Miller is our outside production advisor. Our story editor is Curtis Fox. And our executive producer for Radiotopia is Julie Shapiro.
We also want to thank Warden Ron Davis. And as you know, every episode has to be approved by this guy here.
I am Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison, and I approve this story.
Next time on Ear Hustle, our final episode of the season. It's about getting out of prison the right way and the wrong way.
I didn't really know if I was going to make it, but I had I'd put so much effort into it, and I had planned it, and I had to ask myself, you know, you talk a good story, and I'll see if you're going to follow through.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Radiotopia is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation. Hear more at radiotopia.fm.
Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EarHustleSQ. And for more information on all things Ear Hustle, go to our website, EarHustleSQ.com. Nigel has been telling me about all those iTunes reviews, and thank you. Thank you for all the positive reviews. We appreciate that. So, for Sarah Koenig and Earlonne Woods, I'm not.
Wait a minute. I do not sound like Sarah Koenig. I don't care what people say.
That's a compliment.
I know, but I just don't hear it.
Normie Pippin on the deer. I can't stop him. He macking the Pippin every time I see him. You guys go to sleep and dream about it and wake up and think the game is real. That ain't game. That's dream.
And thanks to Andre Eric Watson for popping into our studio and talking some shit.
When I started talking to you, you started sharpening me up on different things, but...
Well, it must not be taken, because as long as I've been trying to sharpen you up, you're still dull.
On the real, though, I'm Earlonne Woods.
And I'm Nigel Poor. Thanks for listening.
Now, Nige, Ear Hustle listeners are the best.
They really are. You're always in touch, letting us know what you think about episodes and sharing the love.
Yep, it's really a two-way conversation. A relationship.
Indeed it is. And if you're looking for a way to deepen that relationship, consider signing up for Ear Hustle Plus.
Ear Hustle Plus. It's a new subscription service that delivers bonus Ear Hustle episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
In addition to ad-free episodes of Ear Hustle, subscribers get behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff conversations.
We have a monthly AMA, which is Ask Me Anything episode, where you and I answer questions sent in by subscribers.
And seriously, no question is too random or wacky.
Questions like, what's our favorite book? Do we hang out in between seasons? What's the most technically challenging Ear Hustle episode ever?
Okay, Earlonne, yeah, those are good questions, but like we said above, I'd like some wackier ones, actually.
We've also started doing episode commentary, where you and I listen to a classic Ear Hustle episode and talk about how it came together, hard decisions made along the way, and where the people in the episodes are now.
Yeah, we did that for Sellies, and it was a lot of fun, so we're definitely going to do more. And Earlonne, tell them about that idea you're working on.
Sure. I've been sitting down with some of our formerly incarcerated friends who have gotten out and are doing well. Just basically showing how they went from one situation to a better situation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Those will start dropping in the Ear Hustle Plus feed soon.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation. Find out more about Ear Hustle Plus at earhustlesq.com/plus or subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast Player app.
That's earhustlesq.com/plus or right in the Apple Podcast Player.
So, what is your favorite book, Earlonne?
Sorry, Nige. You got to subscribe for that.
Really?
Yes. Radiotopia.